sanitary complaint. I don't understand what's going on here.
This is G3.
Transmit. All you need is the knowledge.
Let's go!
Hello and welcome to G3, Games, Gadgets and Gizmos on BFBS Radio 2. My name's Dave Raven. Coming up in the next 30 minutes, we meet the daughter of the inventor. It's really good for travellers. It means you can lock your hotel room door and stop anybody coming in, even if they've got a key. I also review the Finger Max, something that is really rather grand, but you can't buy. And I'm giving three of them away in the competition. We're going sailing online as I talk to Kali Haglunds from Sail Online in Stockholm. And we start with a call to California. You may have heard me talk on multimedia and also with Glenn about these new e-books, which feature this rather clever thing called e-ink. Unlike a PC screen or an LCD screen, which requires power all the time to keep it going, and once you turn the power off, it all goes grey, these new e-screens, it's a kind of ink, really, which is either black or it's white. And so you can turn the power off and it keeps the colour it was. So these e-books, which are now getting more and more popular, the size of a paperback, but it means you can go on holiday carrying 30 or 40 books of all different types. And the new one from Amazon called the Kindle allows you to download books through Wi-Fi in airport lounges and bookshops and the like. So it's rather clever stuff. But the reason why we're going to California is because somebody has taken this e-ink technology and put it into a watch. I'm talking to Donald R. Brewer from Phosphor Watches to find out about their revolutionary e-ink and a digi watch. Donald, welcome to G3. Where did the idea come from?
Well, the idea is that LCD... until now is sort of characterized low-end digital watches. But, you know, LCD has a very gray and black, very unfashionable appearance. So we were interested in taking e-ink displays, and which are a lot brighter and look more like ink on paper, to give a new fashionable look into a digital or analog watch.
And was it very difficult? I mean, the thing is, with the technology, all you do is press a button on the side of the watch and it changes the face from black to white and different designs. Was it complicated to get it inside a very small thing like a wristwatch?
Yeah, there's some innovations that were required. The function of the current watch, this Phosphor e-ink watch, is basically you press a button and the user can change the different dials with their analog watch or typical quartz analog watch. So it provides a unique effect that no one's ever seen before. Some of the innovations we had to do is, to use it in combination with an analog watch, you would have to drill a hole. There's basically a hole in the middle of the e-ink display, and then obviously integrate the electronics as well as the typical quartz analog movement. So there's some sort of, to size it all and fit it into the watch is pretty challenging, and then to obviously make it look aesthetically pretty cool as well.
Now, one thing I remember back to my youth, going back to the early 1970s, and when the very first LED watches came out, because I'm always a gadget man and I love watches, I got myself one of those. And in the nightclub, I was surrounded by people wanting me to demonstrate it, and I wore the batteries out in about 2 days. And so, I mean, how long is the battery life? If I was playing with this watch, would I wear the batteries out very quickly?
Well, with this watch... one of the advantages of e-ink and why it's been used in e-books is because it's bi-stable, which means the display in an on state or sort of a visible on state or a visible off state can consume no power. You're only basically consuming power when you're changing it. So that's one of the advantages of e-ink that's allowed it to be used in the new Amazon Kindle and other new products. So in our watch application, in many of the dial faces the user could select, we are just then statically displaying a unique look and feel from on the watch dial. And in those modes, the watch is not consuming any power at all. So in some modes, we display time digitally, in which case we're updating it once a minute. But even if you're in a digital time mode, the battery life will be 2 years or greater, depending on the modes you're in.
What's it look like in the dark? Can you see anything of those images, whether it's either a black face or a white face, when it's in the dark?
Well, the display itself is much brighter than an LCD. An LCD is really pretty dark and hard to read, which is why it's required people to develop backlight and frontlight technologies. It ends up in the e-ink display is about 50 to 55% reflective, so it's 3 or 4 times more reflective than an LCD. So it's readable much better, and even in dim lit conditions. But what we have integrated is onto the hands themselves of the quartz part. Of the quartz dial, we've integrated photoluminescent hands, so you can still read time in the dark.
Right, okay. But if I came into a room wearing one of these watches, would you? If I waved it around, would you see this glow in the dark as I from the watch face?
Just the photoluminescent hands would have a tiny glow, but not anything that would, be distracting to anyone else in the room. Just something that you, when you look at your at the watch in dim light conditions, could then read the hands.
Now, I only discovered you last week and made contact with you. How long has the watch been available? Is it very, very new?
Extremely new. We just launched this new watch. This is one of the first, world's first e-ink analog digital watches. We launched it in December with the plan and intention of later this year to launch some digital, just digitals, and just to continue to grow the line.
Now, is it something you're able to patent, or are you just happen to be the first one on the block with this idea?
The company, E-Ink Corporation, is the company that owns the E-Ink technology, the display technology.
Yes.
And they're the one that's enabled companies like Amazon and Sony to do e-books, and then obviously our technology, our company, to do this new Foster E-Ink watch. So we're one of the leading users of it. I think on our end, the intellectual property comes in sort of knowing what the design and functions people really want in watches, and then taking advantage electronically of how we maximize from a design perspective as well as a functional perspective the E-Ink. And that is how we pursued protection and establishing our market.
The face effectively can either be black or white. The only other thing on the watch are the hands and the second hand. And how many different permutations are there in each of the colors of what you can see on the screen?
So, as you mentioned before, there's 4 different dials, and in this case, these would show different watch indices or show the digital time. So you have an Anadigi. So there's 4 different options, but then of each of those 4 options, one of the very unique things of E-Ink is an LCD you always typically see is black characters and a gray background. But sometimes you may see an LCD that's gray characters on a black background. The E-Ink technology allows us to actually invert at will, so it's not just in production. So you have your 4 dials, and we can make them white characters on black, or you can press a button and quickly and just instantly make it black characters on white. So in effect, you have basically 8 different dials to select from.
With a full range of characters from 12 and 3 and 6 and 9 right through to a minimum amount of characters as well. What have you found with users? Which has been, is there a more popular background, white or black?
A number of people who have the watches, it's surprising that everyone has a different flavor that they like. So, that being said, yeah, there's no preference we've seen to date. People, the ability to change it as well based on what you're wearing, time of day, et cetera, is, the flexibility and the uniqueness of the watch.
I would guess it's very much a male watch, isn't it? It's a bit too large for the female wrist, am I right?
It is designed, this current one is designed for men. Later this fall we'll have some ladies styles. But that being said, some of the fashion forward women's styles, if you go to Japan, for example, women typically wear oversized men's watches is somewhat of a trend. So we do sell to some women, but it is designed mostly for men.
I think it's a great, great design, and I love watches, but this looks really, really excellent, and it's very so revolutionary. Where is the website where people can go and get more information, Donald?
It's the brand is Foster. It's a Foster E-Ink watch, and the website is www.fosterwatches.com, and that's Foster spelled P-H-O-S-P-H-O-R.
Excellent. Donald Brewer of in California, thank you so much for your time on G3 today.
Thank you very much.
I'm now about to demonstrate a most interesting device.
This is G3.
BFBS.
Next on G3, Games, Gadgets and Gizmos on the February edition. We all know what it's like when we're travelling, especially if we're in the lower, cheaper hotels. And you're in a hotel room and then somebody rattles on the door from the outside. Or you're wondering if your family are going to be safe as they do their gap year. We need something normally which is easy to lock the door so people can't get in. And I've seen various attempts over the years. None of them work particularly well and some of them are huge. Therefore, big to carry with you. I've got Sarah Adam with me, who's here because you're the daughter of the inventor and he's too far away in Wales. And you've invented a very clever, very simple, well, I say your father has, a very clever, very simple way of locking the door. What's it called?
It's called Hauser Lock, which is a strange name, and the reason for the name is my brother is called Howard and my name is Sarah, and that is literally how he came up with the name.
So Howard, so nothing technical. Howard and Sarah Lock.
That's
yes.
Right.
Which explains why when I saw it on the website I thought, how odd this is, what
absolutely.
A strange name.
It is a strange name.
And it's just literally two parts,
yes.
Made out of recycled plastic or...
It's reinforced nylon,
right.
So it's strong, but it's very light, and it is simple. It's sort of works a bit like a wedge machine. There's one part which fits into the recess in the door. You then close the door on the flat plate and then literally hook the bendy wedge bit through the hole, and that would just secures the door. So even if you're even if somebody's got a key, they can't get into the room. It's unobtrusive from the outside. Nobody could see it from the outside, so they wouldn't know it was on there. But it works really well, and it would if somebody could break into it. It's not designed to replace a key or another sort of more permanent lock, but you would avoid that horrific scenario when you wake up, which you read about so often, where somebody's already above you. You could,
yes.
In a fire, the fire brigade could
break
through it. It had to be that way because we sell lots to university students and things, so it has to be safe from a fire point of view, but you'd certainly know about it if somebody was trying to break through
it. And it works on all doors or nearly all doors?
Nearly all doors, nearly all opening inward doors, so mm-hmm. when you're in the room, a door that opens inwards, it would work on most of those doors.
What about the ones which are getting more and more common now in hotels with the electronic lock type thing? Is that the same principle?
If it's got if the door has a recess, then it would work.
I suppose
yes.
They all do, don't they?
Really? Most yes. of them do. It would work on most doors, yes.
What gave your father the idea? Is he an inventor naturally, or?
Well, he's a woodwork teacher, so he's
course,
always he's always tinkering with bits and pieces. And the idea actually came about when my daughter, who was crawling at the time, was in his sitting room, and he was worried that somebody was going to barge through the door and trap her fingers under the door.
Oh, right.
So he actually at the time thought it'd be handy to have something simple that you could just slot onto a door for a matter of minutes. And so it started there, and then while he was researching it, he noticed that there was a bit of a gap in the market, that there weren't many travel locks, lightweight and cheap locks that would appeal to backpackers and students. And just noticed that there was a gap in the market. There are other locks around, but they're very, as you mentioned, very heavy metal, quite complicated with lots of components that
That's
can
right.
potentially go wrong. And this is very, very simple.
And I've mentioned this before on the programme, interviewing inventors. The odd thing about this is that I'm amazed that nobody's thought of it before. Really.
Yeah, it's often the way, isn't it?
Yes.
It's often the way.
And so from inspiration to development, how many years was that?
I think probably about a year. And he had lots of assistance from the Welsh Development Agency. Down in Wales, and so he went along to lots of meetings there, and they've sort of pointed him in the right direction. And
they're awfully good. I've met people who've been helped by them before. So
they seem to be very good. So he got, having never done anything like this before, had a lot of help from them, and then decided, with lots of encouragement, decided to sort of to go for it and produced one. And we had 10,000 delivered, much to my mother's horror. But they're selling really well.
But it wouldn't take up much of a space, surely, because
no,
they're very small.
That's they
very,
don't.
Yes.
10,000 took up a fair bit of space, and they were all in huge boxes. So she was horrified, but she's been pleasantly surprised at the response.
And again, the Welsh Development Board are good because they've got all the patents in place now and the protections. And
they were able to offer loads of help and advice.
And has it actually developed, has it changed, or is it still really the original incarnation, or are we on Mark 2 or 3 now?
It's still the original incarnation, but there were a lot of work that went into it in the first place, and he's got files of his drawings and designs, and then it was tested and refined, strengthened in certain areas, a little minor adjustments, but in principle it's pretty similar to sort of his first first run.
And a matter of, once you're skilled, a matter of only seconds to lock it into the door.
Yes, absolutely. So yes, it literally takes seconds.
It'll become second nature, won't it, really?
Yes, yes, and that's the idea of it. And it's advertised on the Susie Lampley Trust website. They specialise in sort of in safety talks and advising people. And the thing they particularly liked about it is it makes people aware of their circumstances. It's not locking the door after the horse has bolted, yes, if you like. Yes. It's thinking about your environment and thinking about what you can do to keep you safe and doing something about it before it's too late. So that's one of the reasons that they particularly liked it.
It's also unbelievably small too, and light, so it can carry in a handbag. You'll never even notice it's there.
My dad carries one continually in his breast pocket of his shirt. You know, it's that light. So no, he certainly wouldn't know. And I've got one hanging around the bottom of my handbag, and I think that's what he would like, is everybody just to carry one around. It's handy in the home if you just haven't got a lock on your bedroom door. When my husband used to go away, I'd put rolls of towels along the bottom of the door just to sort of wedge it. But this is just a handy little thing.
In case somebody broke in.
In case someone broke in. Or even in a loo. So many houses you go where people haven't got locks on their toilet doors.
I know, it's so common, isn't it?
Yes, very common. So it's just
trying to get there with your foot out holding the door closed. That's right. You mentioned the website. So where is the website where people can see more about the lock?
Well, it's www.howisourlock.com. And it's also sold on many travel company websites now too.
And it's been available on these other websites for how long? Quite recently?
About sort of 6 months to a year that it's now sort of taking off, yeah. And it's National Union of Students, we have it on their website, so they get a discount as well. So
if you're not a student, how much does it cost you?
It's £4.99, and if you're in the UK, that includes postage and packaging, so it's not too bad, really.
I was going to say, that's not much of a big deal in the sense of, because it's only going to cost you 24 pence to send or something, isn't it?
That's right. It's pretty light. Yes, that's right.
And could any? I mean, is it foolproof? I mean, you've talked it through there, but being radio, we can't actually see the demonstration. Can anybody do it, or does it?
Anybody should be able to do it. It's pretty. Once you know what you're trying to do, it's pretty simple.
Once you've done it once, you'll know how to do it all the time.
And then it's pretty easy once you've done it a couple of times.
I think it's the sort of thing you should have in every backpack, every suitcase, really.
Certainly, if my kids were going travelling, I would definitely make sure that they had one. And used it as a sort of a matter of course.
Or even just staying overnight with friends, I suppose.
Yes, yeah.
You never know.
Never know, right. Unfortunately.
Sarah Adam, thank you so much for being our guest on G3 this month. The website again is
www.howisourlock.com.
That's Howard and Sarah. Yes. H-O-W-S-A-R.
That's it.
.com. That's Excellent. It. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is G3. BFBS.
Next on G3, something you can't buy. I saw this when I was browsing the internet towards the end of last year. It's called the Finger Max, spelt with two X's, and it's basically a little like thing you put over the end of your finger called a finger wrench. Anybody who does DIY will know the feeling. You're working with nuts and bolts and trying to get the nut onto the bolt in an enclosed space, and your fingers just can't hold it properly, and it drops on the floor, and you have to find it, and it's a real struggle. Well, the Finger Max looks like a rather complicated ring, basically. You put it over your finger, but it's got a V groove inside of it, which will hold any size of nut, which is amazing. And so what you do is you then just put it on the finger you want to use, put the nut on the bolt inside of it and press your finger against it to hold it in place, and then put your hand into the enclosed space, and lo and behold, it's done. It works like a charm. Now, I saw this on the net, couldn't see it anywhere else apart from a company in Germany who sold tools and appliances, so ordered one from them. In the end, it was easier to order five from them because the postage was going to cost far more than the actual thing itself. So I've now got five of these things, and I got it hoping I would therefore be able to find on the back of the packet where to find more information. I had to wait 2.5 months for it to arrive. So ordered in December, it's arrived now, all five of them. And it does work really, really well, this Finger Max. On the back of the packet, it gives me a kind of a website, or at least an email address. I trace it further. They're made in Israel. There is a website, but nowhere to buy it from. No indication of where you can buy it from, again, apart from this one company called Lee Valley Tools in the USA. If you go to the website fingermax.com, that's fingermax.com, you will see all about it. You can watch a video on it, but you can't buy it, which is really quite annoying, because they are, if you do any DIY, a wonderful little device, probably costing, say, 60 or 70p, or no more than a pound, definitely, if you could find it in a shop, but you can't. I've got three of them to give away, because I bought five. I'll keep two, and then give three away. So if you think you can find a use for it, all you've got to do is answer this simple question. I've told you the website where you can find more information, but what I haven't done is tell you the colour. So, tell me the colour of the Finger Max, this revolutionary finger wrench. Tell me the colour and one of them could be yours. Entries to dave.raven@bfbs.com. Tell me the colour of the finger wrench and we'll draw the winners out in a month from now. And finally on G3 for this month, a game. We don't do many games, but this time it's a game for grown-ups. You don't need an Xbox or a Wii or a PlayStation. You can play this online. You can play whether you're an expert or a novice. It's all about sailing. It's called sailonline.org. That's the website. And it's run by a company called Sailport AB, and they're based in Stockholm. Now, I do warn you that it is addictive. Once you get started, especially if you have been sailing in your life and done any racing, you will just have to spend all your time online. As I'm on the phone now to Callie Haglunds, who's one of the developers in Sweden. And when I'm talking to Callie, I'm also taking part in the race which is going on right now between Stockholm and St. Petersburg. I'm running about 43 in the fleet of 382 boats. Callie, welcome to G3. It's kind of busy out there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We're a lot of boats racing and it's a lot of fun.
Unlike any other kind of simulated racing, this actually is using real weather conditions and real boats in the sense we know how the boat handles. The race that's going on right now is those wonderfully high-speed VO70s, which are probably the ultimate in sail racing. And so at present, some people are doing like 50 kilometres per hour. It's really hairy stuff. But there's a lot of tactics and skill involved, isn't there? And so people have to learn and know how to sail quite well.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get started in the game, but to master it takes a long time. And the thing is, the people winning are usually very experienced sailors.
That was my question. My question really, I mean, in the present race, there are 358 boats racing. I first discovered this when for the Transat. You're getting more and more people all the time, but are most of the people who are registered, are they mostly skilled racers themselves, do you think?
No, I mean, there's all kinds of people, and I don't know the exact percentages of all kinds, but we have people who never put their foot on a yacht before, and we have people that have been doing Whitbread and World Ocean Race for years, so it's a mix of people.
Now, you're one of the developers of the game. What made you start doing the game? How long has it been in operation?
Well, it started out as a teaching tool at the Royal Institute of Technology here in Stockholm. Jacob, one of the founders and also one of the developers, he made this game for his students to make them learn about the mechanics of sailing. And about 1.5 years ago, I met Jacob and I had a little more programming skills, so we took it to the next level together.
Now, it takes the weather and continually updates the weather all the time, so often you get a wind shift you didn't actually plan or expect, so it takes great skill. It does also allow you to go to bed at night because you can delay some actions, which often tend to go wrong in my case. is there a limit to how many boats you can have on the course?
I mean, of course there's a limit how many boats our servers can handle, but I think we just upgrade our servers. I think we are ready to handle at least twice as many as we got now. But, I mean, we can tune it and we can add more servers. I think we're ready to grow.
I mean, you're growing awfully quickly. I mean, we've got almost double the number of boats racing today than you had for the Transat. So, presumably, the way it's going, you can end up with 1,000 boats on the course before too long, couldn't you?
Yeah, that's quite possible. And we hope for it, too. We want to grow in a steady pace because, I mean, if you had 1,000 boats tomorrow, we couldn't handle it.
That's right.
But we're happy with how things are going.
But the thing is, though, the odd thing is, I mean, most games or things you see online are sponsored or there's adverts or there's money you have to pay. But on the sailonline.org, there's no money to pay. There's no commercials. There are no adverts. So how do you make your money out of this?
For example, the current race is sponsored by a few very generous sponsors, Puma and Ericsson, for example. But we're also planning to launch a few services for members. I mean, there's also going to be a free option to just sail. But I think we can introduce a few offers to our members that make them give us the money to help the development and support us.
And what's your breakdown? Is your breakdown mostly people from Scandinavia, or where are people racing from?
Yeah, I mean, we've been having a lot of attention, for example, here in Sweden, so we have a lot of Swedish players, but we're getting a lot of international players right now, and I think pretty soon we're going to have more for example, people from the UK selling than from Sweden, because we have just started to get attention in the UK. So
that's right. And presumably a lot of the new people who are taking part in the game are coming from other parts of the world, like the UK and America, I guess.
Yeah, we have a lot of players from UK, from the US, and actually a bunch from Brazil in this race. So I was happy to see that.
Yeah, it's true, yes. Now, what makes you choose the boats you choose? I mean, for the transatlantic race, we were racing really high-speed catamarans. On the race that's going on right now, we're racing the really top-of-the-range VO70s, the Volvo 70s, which really are the state-of-the-art. We had one race which we raced ordinary sort of Beneteau 40-footers, which is more like normal in a way. So what makes you choose the boat we race with?
Well, first off, we need access to a good performance diagram for the boat, so we can simulate the performance accurately. And I mean, one of our founders, Magnus Voxén, he's a very experienced sailor. He's done a couple of ocean races, Volvo ocean races. So, of course, there's a lot of knowledge about Volvo Open 70. So it's a natural pick for us.
Right.
But I mean, people want to sail in like more normal boats too, like 40-footers. So we give them that too. It's great fun. It's a lot of different racing, but it's all great fun.
A lot of it is down to tactics, and I know that, I suspect that some people are using things like Deckman and computer-aided devices. Yeah. Have you found that people using, if you like, other aids, it's given them an advantage in the racing?
Well, I mean, first off, they don't have access to our exact performance diagrams on the graph in the game.
Ah.
And they don't have access to our forecast because we have a unique weather forecast provider called WeatherTech in Sweden. So I mean, there of course there's an advantage to use other routing software, but what we see is that people without software can compete with the ones using software. So I mean, it might be an advantage, but it's not necessary to win. Absolutely not.
There's a chat room which goes on continuously all the time the races go on. Some people obviously take their laptops to bed with them. It's very odd. And the age range is also very wide too, isn't it? So you've got a whole range of sailors of different disciplines and ages.
Yeah, I mean, we're not our users is not the typical gamers, you know. I'm not sure, but I think the typical player on sailline.org is someone between 30 and 45 years old, but we have 10-year-old players and we have 78-year-old players, so there's some big span.
Now, by the time the listeners hear this, the present race will have ended, but there's a race which you can always take part in, which is like a sort of a round-the-boys timed course race. So if people want to have a play, and as you say, you don't have to have sailing experience, but if you have any, it makes it even more exciting and more exhilarating. Where can people go to get an indication and sign up and download the software?
They can go to sailonline.org. And if you go there, if it isn't an active race when you go there, if you just create an account, we'll probably send an email in the next big race.
Right, and you can also join the Lace Raid. I did that with the Transat. By the time I signed up, I was all 3 days behind everybody else, but it was worth just getting onto the race to see how it went on. So it's great stuff. I find it tremendously exciting, very addictive. It's not very good for harmonious relationships, though, because wives often get a bit twitchy when all of a sudden you get up at 2 a.m. and head back to the computer. But other than that, it's great fun. And Kalle Haglund, thank you so much for your time on G3 today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
And that's it for this month's Games, Gadgets and Gizmos G3 on BFBS Radio 2. Don't forget everybody we've spoken to and their websites you'll find on the G3 website at bfbs.com/G3. And also the competition with the question, what colour does the Finger Max come in? And to give the game away too much, there's a photograph on the G3 website. Until the March edition of G3, from me, Dave Raven, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Terminate automatic.